to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return. I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels coming our way in a minute. It's cold outside. We added a little wind to the cold this morning. I'm not so sure that was all that welcome. What do you think, Minnie? I'm thinking no. S&P futures up 11, Dow futures up 72, NASDAQ up 62. Look like we have an up day again today. We'll see where that ends. Kind of ducked on the close yesterday, a little bit yesterday, so that was a little unusual, but it happened. And so we've got the same kind of stuff going on today as we have the whole rest of the way, with the money coming into the system. We've got the market going to the sky, and some of the stocks I was looking at yesterday. I don't normally look at individual stocks for the show, but some of these things are absolutely astounding. I was looking at some of the marijuana stocks. I've been around in this business a real long time, and when you start getting implied volatilities in the 300s, it's pretty impressive. I mean, it's back in the day, I was actually looking around to do some ratio vertical spreads like I used to do back in the day, which nobody's done in like forever. And I think if you did some of these things small around the sprinkle them around the infield and did them small, I think you'd be a winner on a lot of them. But I don't think anybody even knows how to do those anymore. It's pretty scary when you start talking about those kind of ratios. One of them, I was going to do it 5x6, and I think I won't say the stock because I don't want anybody doing it. I think it was an $8 credit. Stock's trading about 60, and the break even to the upside was like 105. Which of course means it'll probably go right to 110, but still, when a stock at 60, normally a 105 break even is not so bad. But in this day and age, this stuff is all over the place. I mean, these marijuana stocks are incredibly hot. There doesn't seem to be any shortage of any kind of cash anywhere. And I don't know, I was listening to Jerome Powell yesterday, and I tell you what, it's not my job. I would fire that guy in a nanosecond. He actually said, look around you, in the last 20 years, there hasn't been any inflation. Price of houses have doubled. Price of hospital care for companies has gone up 3 times. The university tuition has gone up 3 times. What bubble is this guy in? I know it's a theme of mine, and I shouldn't be on it this much, but the man is in charge. He's supposed to be the most brilliant economist in the world. What is the matter with him? I just absolutely don't get it. If somebody comes out, and if it's 100 degrees outside, and somebody reports from another governmental agency that it's really 70, does that mean he can put his coat on? Or what is the deal with these people? But we're not gonna solve those problems today. We do have a interesting story that Larry Flynn died. Hustler magazine. I gotta believe Hustler's been out of business for, it's gotta be 20 years, and yet he won a pretty interesting Supreme Court case. We'll talk to Lou about. Regarding political satire. It's actually a very key case, and especially in this new world now that everybody thinks that if they don't like somebody, they're not supposed to be able to have a livelihood or anything. Lou, how are you?
Morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was just hoping you were going to be here, and we'll talk about your buddy, Larry Flynn, dying.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't really say much about Mr. Flynn. I was not a Hustler fan.
You stuck with Playboy?
But on the other hand, you know, it's not every pornographic magazine publisher who makes it all the way to the Supreme Court.
That's right. And that's to this day, that's a very key ruling, isn't it?
It is in the publishing business, yeah. The Hustler pushed the edges of what was generally acceptable within polite society, and I think we still haven't really wrestled with the issue of you know, what is pornography and the like, but the internet, really the availability of you know, easy video in the form of first videotapes and VCRs and then discs and now of course the internet, the availability of easy access to pornography has basically made the issue moot.
Well, I don't think it's not what the case was about. The case was about political satire.
Right. It was a defamation claim, if I remember right.
Yeah. But it had to do with, I think, a political cartoon, didn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Because you're
catching me cold on this, but I...
Well, wait a minute. How long have I known you? You know everything. It's impossible to catch you cold.
But yeah, I'm starting to remember this now. But yeah, no, I mean, the case was an attack on him for that cartoon because of the nature of the magazine. So anyway, I don't have much to say on it. He passed. He was, he was in a wheelchair as a result of an attack.
He got shot. It was during the trial, wasn't it?
Assassination attempt, and. He ultimately became good friends with Jerry Falwell.
Really?
Yeah. At least that's what they both reported at some point, that they had some kind of a conversation and actually got to know each other and, you know, I won't say good friends, but at least, you know, friends. They talked.
Well, the magazine's been out for what, 20 years? Got to be at least that much. The magazine has been around.
Yeah, and so I don't know what... I don't know what the. Are any of those magazines? I mean, Playboy still publishes, but the whole idea of a still shot magazine of pornography like Hustler or Playboy, I think is gone, right? Because of what you can get on the internet now.
Pretty much. Plus, I think they lost their cachet with any kind of printed magazine. But I mean. I mean, in the early 80s, I mean, if you were a big shot and you weren't asked to be in a Playboy interview, I mean, there's something wrong with you. I mean, Jimmy Carter was in there. I mean, they paid more for jokes. They paid more for articles like any other paper.
And interestingly enough, I mean, I always laughed at the evolution or chuckled at the evolution of a magazine like Playboy and earlier before it, Esquire. I mean, Esquire was thought to be at one point fairly risque, and you know it developed in by the 70s. It had developed. I mean, they were publishing Tom Wolfe and Norman Mailer, and who I think also wrote a couple of essays in Playboy. But they were publishing some fantastic literature. I think that was probably its heyday. It's deteriorated since then. But you know, all those magazines, I think. Moved from just pictures of very, very attractive women in stages of undress to fairly good examples of traditional American journalism.
Well, the story that I quote a lot, of course I don't have the magazine anymore, but that I quote a lot was essentially the huge Howard Hughes story. That was a Playboy. The 3-4 months in a row. The original novels were columns in the newspapers, right? Like Tom Jones and so forth. But this wasn't that. But it was like I'm thinking it was a 2 or 3 part expose on Howard Hughes. You know, in his when he was living up in the what was the hotel he lived in? Was it the Dunes or the Desert Inn? One of the two.
Yeah, one of the two, where he became a complete total recluse.
Yeah, all his handwritten notes, he would write everything out longhand, cursive, as they would say today. The guy who worked for him, his CEO, or whatever you want to call him, never met him. All these Mormon guys would take care of him, sort of take care of him, because talk about going nuts, but he was a brilliant, really good-looking guy when he was young. When he went to the bathroom, they had to take paper towel and put it down where he was walking because he was such a germaphobe. And yet he wouldn't let anybody touch his teeth. They were hanging out of his mouth, and he never cut his toenails or his fingernails. They were like half a foot long. It was like the oddest combination of... But he just would write handwritten notes. That's how he ran his company. But he had all kinds of stuff in aerospace, didn't he? Plus he owned... I think in Vegas, when I first went out there, I think he owned the Dunes, the Desert Inn, Castaways, and I think two more. He owned like five of them.
Yeah, these are all down on the old strip.
Yeah. Well, that's the new strip, but they're just the new place.
So Hughes was actually a bona fide aeronautical engineer and designed a number of his own aircraft, including the Spruce Goose and, you know, a number of others.
What was his major patent that he got, his major invention? Lou, you're the only man on Earth that would remember this.
I'm sorry, his major invention?
He had a patent on. Without it?
I think he had a number of patents, but I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
He invented the flush rivet.
Oh, okay.
Which without which you wouldn't have any kind of plane. Well, somebody else probably would have invented it, but the planes before that, boy, can you imagine the drag they had instead of a the rivets are all sticking out?
In fact, that was one of the that required a certain level of manufacturing expertise. And I remember when Belyenko brought the MiG-25 from Russia to Japan, one of the first things that somebody commented on was the fact that the riveting wasn't flush, and this was a Mach 3.5 aircraft or 3.2 aircraft, and one of my aeronautical engineering professors made the comment that this was proof that the most important factor in flight engineering was thrust. Because if you could put big enough engines on it, you could fly anything, including a cement barn door. And the Soviets just didn't pay attention to, you know, fine finishing details like that. They just ramped up the engines to.
But once you do that, though, don't you totally screw up your how much fuel you can carry and how far you can go?
Oh, it's terrible. But if you put big enough engines on it, you can fly it, and you can fly it fast.
What were the planes that they used in Vietnam, though? Was it the Phantoms, the F-4s?
Those F-4s, A-4s. In terms of Air Force stuff, it was F-4s and F-105s, mainly.
Well, because I bought one of those, and they're way too complicated to read. You could understand what the hell it was. I was lost. I bought one of those, Tom Clancy ended up putting out a bunch of books where they weren't mystery novels. They were, one of them was like fighter aircraft.
Yeah, submarine.
And then he did one on, did he do one on tank warfare or something where every little nut and bolt that was in the tank and you're reading this thing and you're like, talk about two pages and you fall asleep. It was great for insomnia. But I think he said the F-4 with full afterburners, you'd run out of gas in 6 minutes or something.
I think you could dogfight. I think when you went full afterburner, you could dogfight for maybe a little bit longer than that, depending on what kind of maneuvers you were doing and what kind of speed you came into the thing in. But yeah, the F-4 was not a great dogfighting airplane because it was heavy, even with the two engines. You know, moving that much mass around in tight corners is a problem. It was much like the Foxbat, the MiG-25, it was designed as a pure interceptor. It was a Navy design, forced on the Air Force, but it was designed as a pure interceptor. The idea was that you would put the thing up there, turn its radar on, and you could shoot missiles from 15, 20 miles away and kill your guys, and you wouldn't have to get into a turning fight. And of course, they got to Vietnam. And the rules of engagement didn't allow you to shoot like that, so they ended up in turning fights with aircraft that were quite frankly better at turning fights than the Phantom.
What's the F-15 is? Is F-15? You don't want to dogfight an F-15, right?
You don't want to dogfight a 15. You don't want to dogfight an F-16. You really don't want to dogfight something like an F-22. The modern design now let me back up. The F-22 is probably the best dogfight fighter in the world, matched up with comparable to the Su-35 or Sukhoi 37. I believe it's 37. All of those have thrust vectoring, which means you can literally point the nozzle of the engine in a off-board sight direction to move the tail of the aircraft around so you can turn tighter. You can bring the aircraft to an almost complete stop in midair. In a turning fight, that kind of maneuverability and acceleration ability is crucial. The F-22 also is virtually invisible to airborne radar, and as a result, you have to, if you're not an F-22, you've got to close to within visual to see the thing, or within close enough range to get a read on its the heat signature of its engines before you can do anything. And by that time, the 22 is, you know, has fired on you.
Well, the ones they use in Top Gun,
the newer aircraft, like the 35. The F-35 is not a very effective dogfighting aircraft. It's not as effective as the F-16, for example. But it wasn't designed to be. It's a newer fighter. What it's designed to do is act as a node for information processing, so that that aircraft can it's very stealthy, but so you can't really see it on radar. But its real key is that it can take information from all kinds of sensors all over the battlefield, from other aircraft, from AWACS, from ship radars, from surface radars. It could take all that information, integrate it into a sort of a picture of what the airborne battle space looks like, and then in the advanced version, it can literally take, you know, missiles from a ship or from another aircraft and direct those to targets. So you don't even really know the things out there. And the next thing you know, you've got missiles coming at you from different sources in different directions.
The one they use in Top Gun, the F-14, if I recall from what Tom Clancy was saying, it's one of the first planes that was, they said this thing has to have look down radar, which was a big dish, and they basically built a plane around the dish, didn't they?
Absolutely. The fighter technology that sort of culminated with the 15 was designing the airplane around the radar. So the F-4, both the F-4, F-16, F-15, and F-14 had look-down shoot tank capability. Which means the aircraft's at altitude, and it can pick up a target against the background of the earth and or water and break it out and then get a targeting solution for a missile. But the F-14 had at the time one of the most, if not the most powerful airborne radars in the world. And I recall the test of that thing. They picked up targets at like 170 nautical miles, which was unheard of. And then it there were six targets moving at various altitudes and speeds, some of them supersonic. And it picked up the six targets and then fired six missiles within like, you know, a minute. And wow. Guided each missile to the target. Intercept ranges in excess of 100 miles.
Didn't that thing know when you lifted them off the aircraft carrier? We got to get to another subject here in a second, but this is fascinating. I may want to lose here. When those things took off in the aircraft carrier, and a few of them were circling around waiting for the other guys to take off, didn't they? They had a guy up there topping off the tanks because it took them so much just to get up in the air. They wanted to be topped off once they got up to cruising height.
Well, that's true for a lot of aircraft. Your takeoff weight is not as great as your flying weight. So you would take off with fuel tanks that might be two-thirds full. In the case of the SR-71, you took off with a tank that was barely a third full. Just enough gas to get to altitude and return to base if you missed the tanker. And then you would be filled up with gas to the maximum in-flight weight of the aircraft once you got airborne. And that was true. That's true for a lot of airplanes. But yeah, if they were going to have those guys up for, you know, combat air patrol and you know, doing their normal thing, they would top them off. The aircraft also had the F-14 had a variable sweep wing.
So that's right. Yeah.
If it was not going full speed, they just wanted to be at altitude, kind of cruising, looking around. They would sweep the wings forward, give them greater lift, and that reduced their lift over drag ratio, so that they could maintain altitude with less fuel. and if they needed to go fast or they needed to chase something, they'd sweep the wings back so it looked almost like a delta wing aircraft, and then they could accelerate to full speed.
By the way, Lou, did you happen to be watching, I forget the guy's name, which is, I should start writing this stuff down, like a, or, I need a guy like in The Quiet Man, where you had the guy walking around with him, the big, huge guy, and he kept saying, write it down in me book, you know, that we don't like this guy, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
What was his name? He was in every John Wayne.
I can't remember his name.
He was in every John Wayne movie, for God's sake. Squire something. He was in the movie.
Yes.
Anyway, we've been, the head of Coca-Cola was on yesterday, and Coca-Cola came out with their earnings, which I think were pretty good, but they just lost this big tax case. And the guy is outraged. I mean, he's taking this to the Supreme Court, and he's going everywhere. Lou, we've been talking about this for as many years as you've been on the show with me, buddy. They lost one of these, I think, totally cheating tax cases where they move stuff overseas through transfer pricing.
Right.
And when they're interviewing this guy, and this is a Forbes article, it says talk about what are the main issues here in this case, and this guy Ryan Finley is an expert, evidently, whatever an expert is. He goes, the main transaction at issue is Coca-Cola, the U.S. parent's license of its core intangible property, including its trademarks, brand names, product formulas. Now, the trademarks and stuff are all that we give them. We mean the U.S. gives them, right? Brand names, product formulas, all the key things that go into the products to foreign subsidiaries the company called its supply points. So they sent these things out there and called them supply points in all these other countries. The issue was whether the pricing for these licenses was arm's length. The decision also deals with the taxpayer's ability to rely on the terms of an old closing agreement, whatever that is, which had expired, and whether it could support a transfer pricing arrangement that was seemingly inconsistent with its own intercompany contracts. So evidently what they would do is if there was a low tax country, they would put one of these supply points out there and charge them a price that were, they made the money over there instead of here. Right, Lou? So the taxes would be in, you know, Botswana or someplace.
Well, they transferred the licenses so that the licenses were not business property that were generating income in the United States. That's what I understand.
Right, right.
And so they would be taxed at the foreign entity's rate, and then the revenue would be returned to the United States at some reduced tax rate. I don't know the nuances of the case, but the bottom line is, yeah, this is something we've talked about for years, with them taking advantage of our tax rates to set up international, I'll call them havens, but international operations that reduce their tax footprint here, and basically benefit the tax revenue of a foreign nation. Yeah.
Because, I mean, the simple version, I'm sure these guys have it clouded in a bazillion different contracts and stuff, but the simplest iteration, and tell me if I'm wrong, is, say, for instance, Matty Weber hauled in five sponsors and Stocks and Jacks is making like $1 million a year in people. So, of course, the tax rate here, we're a C Corp, is what it is. But suppose we were to send... He'd go, wouldn't he? Maybe would send Thomas to like Ireland or someplace.
Sure.
And every week, he I use the term fax, showing my age. He faxes over like the guest list for the show, or something. So we pay $50,000 a month to the subsidiary in wherever that's tax free zone in Ireland. So the $1 million we make here is now reduced by $600,000, and it's going to that spot over there. Now we pay Thomas, you know what's minimum wage in Ireland, but we say, oh no, we can't do it. We don't get our scheduling and our stuff from our associate producer in Ireland, you know, and he's worth, they charge us $50,000. Well, who's they? Well, the they is us, right? So now all of a sudden our taxes here are $400,000, and over there, or our income here is $400,000, over there it's $600,000. So whatever the taxes here we pay. Now these guys, I'm sure, get greedy enough to where maybe there's no taxes here, where we actually charge the entire million off to Ireland. But that's the game, Lou. And you know what? It really sucks because when I say that, I'm not saying that the attorneys didn't find an edge in the law and maybe, you know, the company hired four IRS guys afterwards, so the other guys let them do it. Who knows? But the bottom line is, I mean, I think, Lou, and I'm a very simple soul from the South Side. Right now, the way the economy is, every time somebody cheats, somebody else is going to have to pay more. It's not like it's a game. It's not a zero-sum game. I mean, we're down to, if you look at the tax receipts in the country, we're down to 7% corporate taxes. We were, what, 17, 20 years ago or something? So, I mean, if you get to the point where, I'm not saying they should, I'm not even making a judgment call that they should pay. All I'm saying is, right now, the attitude I have is if Lou finds a way to screw him on his taxes, someday, somewhere, I got to pay more. Now, is that a fair view of the world, Lou, or not?
Okay, so this actually works as a segue into the article that I wanted to talk about today, the Tablet Magazine article relating to the 30 tyrants, which is a reference to the rulers of the Athens city state after it was conquered by Sparta. The loyalty, you're talking about this from a South Side Chicago, America First kind of position. And the point of that article and the point of this discussion is that a great number of our corporate people don't look at this as the United States or America anymore, and they don't look at themselves as Americans. They look at themselves as globalists.
Right.
Flooding from one market to another, moving capital and business from across international borders with as much alacrity and quickness as they can to avoid what they think are the petty sort of nationalist prejudices and biases of the various countries, including the country in which they have citizenship. And quite frankly, because I know a number of these people, the country to which they will return once, bad things happen, and on which they will rely to defend their interests once bad things start happening.
Well, that's where you have your patents and your trademarks and everything. All right, Lou, let's continue after the break. But SP Futures is up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 61. And I'll tease everybody with the name Harold Janine. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatory antiinflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holmes, Mr. Lil Michaels. He's Matt Werber aboard. SP Futures up 12 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 60. We ducked a little on the close last night. Matter of fact, right on the close, which is kind of high because we've had mutual fund buying for quite a while. Dow Futures up 76 over in Europe. Now, these guys were dead flat yesterday, pretty much. DAX up 69 today, 0.5%. FTSE up 2. They're flat again. Kekron, minus 34 cents. They're flat again. So they've been real quiet over in Europe for the last couple of days after not being quiet for quite a while. Nikkei up 57. They've been way up, so that's quiet for them, 0.2%. These guys are on a tear. There's 2 days in a row on the Shanghai. Up 51, 1.4%. Hang Seng up 134.4%. The, Whoa. We got some markets that are closed here. These guys are last night. No, Hang Seng is the only one today. The other guys were yesterday. I'll make sure of that next time I go through this because there's a holiday over there. Yesterday, we had a Dow up 61, but the S&P was down 1, NASDAQ down 35, so we were mixed to the downside bands. 1.14, so they've come back a little bit, the 10-year yield. The Bund, minus 0.46. Japan, however, positive 0.07. They are continuing to move ever so slowly to the upside on the 10-year yield. Oil, down 35 cents, 58.33. Brent still over 61, even though it's down 41 cents, 61.06. Natural gas up 6 cents, 2.97, almost $3, Matty. The cold spell. Cold spell's doing it. Arbob is doing it to me, too. Arbob down a penny, 163. Gold is up a dollar, 18.43. Quiet day here, though. Silver up 7 cents, 27.15. Copper unchanged at 3.77. Platinum up another $16, 12.63. And I guess we got to do the crypto. Bitcoin up 1,600 to 46,475. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a significant issue down on I-80 on the eastbound side between U.S. 30 and the Veterans Memorial I-55. That's exit number 137. Apparently a semi-double tractor trailer with the rear trailer on its side that has 80 closed due to that overturned semi. So crews are on the scene. Expect significant delays on the eastbound side near Joliet on I-80 as you're approaching I-55 on the eastbound side. That's our big red concern this morning. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson and Eisenhower all quiet. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looking good, too. Let's see. One other crash just popped up here, and this is right as you're getting on the... right near the circle from the Stevenson here. We have an accident blocking the two right lanes on the Stevenson on the northbound side. So this is the inbound side right at Lakeshore Drive there. Slow ramp to the inbound Dan Ryan. And this is causing issues as this crash is blocking the two right lanes that just came across the screen here on the Stevenson right as you're getting onto Lakeshore Drive and the Dan Ryan, that interchange right there. Only other crash in the area is off the expressways. And it's not even a crash. It looks like Arlington Heights Road between Sigwalt Street and Northwest Highway is closed due to railroad crossing work. So just a closure there. Weather today, another cold day here in Chicago. Overcast skies, could have some flurries this afternoon, a high of 22. Right now it is clear and 9 degrees with wind chills right around zero. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 77 today. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, the Bulls rallied back from a halftime deficit to beat New Orleans last night, 129-116. Suns topped the Bucks, 125-124. Blackhawks were off last night. They'll welcome Columbus into town tonight. That's a 7 p.m. puck drop. And in college hoops, Northwestern had a 14-point lead on Indiana but blew the lead and then lost in double overtime to the Hoosiers, 79-76.
Hey, for those of you, just I'll do this briefly. Illinois was always a state, and I'm not positive where it is now, but I think if you're going to run double trailers, you can only run 22 footers, Manny. And some states allowed you to do 40s, and a couple let you do 45s, which looks like a train for pretty much. So if you go over the Skyway, as soon as you get to Indiana, you'll see a big area on the side where there's a bunch of trailers parked. What you would have to do is, before you got to Illinois, you would have to uncouple one of them, and they'd have to come get it.
Oh, wow.
Because it was not universal. You couldn't just put double 45-footers and drive cross-country, because some states didn't want any part of those things. It really does look more like a train. Anyway, Lou, a little bit of useless information there, unless you're driving a truck for us. I imagine you read it. The book, The Sovereign State of ITT?
Yeah, I read it a long time ago.
A long time ago.
I know who Janine is.
But he was the first one of these guys you're talking about.
Yeah.
International Telephone and Telegraph.
Yeah.
They used to actually put cables in the bottom of the ocean, right?
They did all kinds of stuff. That was their initial business was telephone and telegraph lines and manufacture of support equipment. He expanded them from I just looked at his bio on the break. So he was the head of the company for almost 20 years. And from 59 to 77. So you think about the growth that happened in the U.S. economy during that time frame. But they were, by the time he left, they were running Sheraton hotels and, I think they had some aviation business. I mean, it was a very, very diversified international business.
The term was conglomerate.
Yeah, that typifies, that kind of business typifies what I am referring to now as kind of the global elite, or as John McWhorter, who was a professor, I don't know where John teaches, but anyway, he's a very well-known professor and now is referring to them as the elect, a group of people who, again, and I know, I mean, I have people, friends who are like this, who don't look at themselves really as citizens of anything but this corporate world in which they operate. I've had some rather pointed discussions with some of them, to the extent that they talk about global interests and, how backward America is in certain areas and how repressive it is with respect to certain aspects of trade and things like that, and I just said, so your loyalty is less to a particular country. They view nationalism as a real problem. Patriotism is a real problem. They look down on it. And my point was, where's your passport? Because it sounds to me like you really don't have any loyalty to the United States. But I'm pretty sure you've got a U.S. passport, and you're going to keep that U.S. passport because the rest of the schlubs are going to defend you when this all goes to hell, or when your buddies in China decide that they've had enough of playing on the international scene by the rules. You're going to come running, and when you come running, you're going to come running back here because you know that notwithstanding your ability and your desire to evade taxes and not. Do anything that necessarily supports the U.S. It's the U.S. that's going to spend the resources to protect you and your family and everybody else when everything goes south.
Well, there's a page or two in that book, Lou, and what I remember is, like you say, so long ago I read it. It's in the first chapter. It had to do with he was at a cookout, and all of a sudden he sits down having a drink, and it was a postulation of his view of the world. It was exactly what you just said, but it was written out so coherently, better than even you could ever do. It had to do with, I have to deal with all these, they don't understand business. They don't understand what I'm trying to accomplish. They don't get it. And I end up having to deal with essentially these loser bumps, these politicians, half of them, I don't know how they got a job. I would never hire any of them. Which is probably true, and how I spent half my time just getting around a bunch of buffoons, basically, and
right. Well, but it is like I said, his loyalty is not is not to anything but his corporate structure.
Right. Oh yeah. Oh, and the fact that
and the people he hangs with at Davos or you know, London or Brussels or Tokyo or Shanghai, the people he hangs with are other people exactly like that, who you know, and they don't really talk about their country. They don't talk about their culture. They talk only about their corporate structure, their corporate well-being, and you know, all being members of it. And they view the world literally as their oyster, in the sense that they are absolutely convinced of their genius, and they are absolutely convinced of the rightness of them being in a position to tell other people what to do.
Well, it goes, I think, just what you're saying a little bit, even more than that. I think he felt, and I'm going to say the rest of these guys do, unless you have, and I'll just lob a couple names out because I happen to think there were issues, but they were stone cold brilliant. If you got a Roosevelt or you got a Kennedy in the White House that I think are intellectually right up there, I think that Harold Janin and the rest of these guys absolutely feel that the selection process to be the chairman of a company like that is way more stringent than the selection process to be a politician, certainly in some of the countries they deal with.
ITT was basically involved in a significant way in the overthrow of the Allende government in Chile.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They felt that, and again, these corporate structures they view nationalism. They view love of country, patriotism, you know, my country first. They view that as anathema. They view that as something that hinders business.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
They believe that their structure and their position, because they're wealthy and successful in business, and they've got a bunch of people surrounding them who do what they say, they literally believe that they are, you know, the philosopher kings of Plato, if you want.
I think it is, when Dr. J and I were on the score years ago, I think I ruffled everybody's feathers, but I mean, George Bush, I think, was the chairman, or the president, and then they had this meeting of, like, all the seven biggest, well, now there's like four of them, the seven biggest oil companies. And I got to believe that when you got Rex Tillerson and all these people in this room, they probably felt that George Bush was the... Was the cripple kid, right? I mean,
yeah. That would not surprise me. And I want to go back to this argument, this article, the 30 tyrants, because this kind of mentality is quite present. I mean, this article postulates, and I really agree with a lot of what it says. It postulates that the latest rollout of this kind of mentality, a demonstration of this kind of mentality, has been our corporate elites doing everything they can to keep good relations with China, even though, notwithstanding the fact that China is engaged in outright genocide with concentration camps and an outright overwhelming suppression of its domestic population, and yet, because there's money to be made, we're jumping right into our corporate elites are jumping right into the middle of it and are acting directly to subvert efforts by the U.S. government to try to protect itself and try to protect the country from China and the kind of rapacious international culture that China is trying to develop, even to the extent of you know, suppressing the origin of the Wuhan virus or suppressing news about you know, how bad things are in China. And, for example, you know, the author points to things like the NBA, which is absolutely in the hip pocket of the Chinese government, and the Hollywood film establishment, which is rapidly getting there. And the point of the article is these corporate entities, these corporate interests, again, don't view themselves as American. They view themselves as globalists. And so the Chinese government is just another entity with which they deal and because there's a lot of money there, they're gonna bow to those interests. It's very, I mean, again, this is the old bit about people who don't know history. It's right out of Lenin's, you know, playbook. Vladimir Lenin made the comment, I believe in the early 20s, something to the extent that the capitalists will sell us the rope by which we hang them.
Absolutely.
And this is what this article postulates is going on with our economic relationships with China, with the PRC.
Well, Lou, as I wander through my day, I'm obviously looking at stocks. I'm looking for positions to put on for people. I'm getting calls from clients, and I keep one eye and one ear on the TV, you know, and I don't listen to it word for word. And all of a sudden, it caught me. Where are we? Thursday, Tuesday. They had the chairman of I haven't heard of it. Well, I know Carrier Air Conditioners, right? But this guy's, it's a Carrier Corp, and they must do the shipping. I don't know, you know, what else they do. And the chairman's on there, and he's talking about, oh, yeah, well, we got this shipping, we're going to open things up to China, and we're going to this and that. I mean, the man is, I'm just sitting there listening to him, and I'm going, the man is totally amoral about why Trump was pissed off at China in the first place and why other people are. And, I mean, and not just Trump. I mean, you and I, you've talked about it forever. I mean, Russell was on yesterday, and he's been in China a bunch of times about how this guy's getting paid off here, and the salaries don't go to the people. They go to some political hack who's becoming a millionaire or might actually be moving here. I mean, you know, and all the stuff that they actually have people here that they're watching their people that are here, and they're in charge.
Yeah, Confucius societies. Well, I mean, this is, and the insidious nature of it, I think, is lost on a lot of people. I mean, the lockbox issue on the influence of China in the United States, I thought, was extremely revealing. But that's just not getting publicity because in some parts it's being suppressed by Chinese influence.
You know what, Lou? It's not just...
Let me just...
Can I say something real quick? Okay. Let me say it. It's not... People, they don't want to hear it, Lou. If the blue jeans are $20 cheaper,
they don't, but I think if we were subjecting people to the news, for example, that China forced the Top Gun movie to remove the patches for Taiwan and I can't remember some other place off of his flight jacket, which was supposed to be the flight jacket he was wearing back in 1984 or 85 when the movie came out. The fact that China forces certain things out of our movies that are not conducive to a positive image of China, that China basically directs the NBA or the NBA does it on their own to try to get its stars to talk about how great things are in China and how we shouldn't be criticizing the way China's handling Hong Kong or the Uyghurs because that's their internal business. That needs to be pushed to the forefront. The fact that these Confucian societies are being used to monitor Chinese exchange students in the United States, and you know, for some inexplicable reason, the Biden administration just reversed the Trump executive order requiring universities to disclose how much money from China has been given to their various departments for research and development. There are several other pro-China things that the Biden people have done with this incomparable number of executive orders that have been issued in the last couple of weeks that, you know, really should be raising eyebrows.
Well, they are to me. They are to me.
And so they're not, as I said, there's so much influence in our media establishment. And again, because of, you know, Trump hatred, so much of this stuff was suppressed because it was something that was.
Well, Lou, even if you're a Trump hater, you know, and I am not a hater of anybody. I look at the man as had a huge opportunity, and to my extent, to my judgment, blew it. So I'm not happy with him for that. And I think he is, in a lot of ways, on a personal level, the way he never pays people. I mean, I always thought he was kind of a bad guy, but. Everybody should realize, I think everybody should, I mean, it's not up to me to tell people how to think, whether you liked him, whether you liked Obama, whether you liked Biden, the idea that the executive order reached new levels under Obama, doubled under Trump, and now is doubling again in 3 weeks under Biden, everybody who knows our government at all, whoever took a civics class, needs to look in the mirror and say, this is not right. I mean, it doesn't really matter who's doing it or whatever. That's why you have a Congress. And now the lady in South Dakota is saying, look, in South Dakota, we are not going to obey executive orders because that's not the way a law gets passed in this country, that we have to abide by it.
Well, let me back up on that. What South Dakota has done is they've said, we're going to do an immediate constitutional review of federal executive orders, and if we believe they violate the Constitution, we're going to challenge them. They're not, which by the way happens in every instance of a federal executive order coming out. Most states, if they're affected by it anyway, will immediately look at it. But let me tell you where this is going in terms of these executive orders. The Biden people put out a statement yesterday or the day before that they would start looking at travel bans and restricting travel between states based on the potential for new COVID variations. And the state they mentioned by name was Florida. And if that doesn't raise the hair on the back of your neck, first of all, interstate travel is a constitutional right, and it's a fundamental constitutional right. Second of all, to single out Florida on this is the use of federal executive power to damage potential political opponents. The Democrats are terrified of what's going on in Florida. A very effective Republican governor who got elected by a miracle, because if it had been the other guy, the Democrat that was running, they would have had a drug-using, a drug addict, addicted guy who, you know, got arrested in a hotel room with a bunch of meth and other stuff. They would have had him in office. They've got the Republican governor who is very effectively managing COVID, whose economy is booming, and who is able to say to the other states, hey, look at me, I'm New York looks terrible compared to me, California looks terrible compared to me, all the blue states look awful compared to me, and he's doing it. The Democrats are terrified of this guy. And so you see this incredible statement coming out of the federal government that by executive order, we think we might have to put a travel ban in to stop people from going to Florida. I mean, it's astounding.
Well, that's the part that I wonder why. I mean, Adam, why you study law a lot more than I do. Me being, you know, kind of a half-assed behavioral economist, I study people and their actions, Lou. And I'm going to say that this thing going on with China, and I've read and listened to a lot of studies of what was going on in Nazi Germany and Hitler, and I honestly believe that the man's health, or lack thereof, he was on 22 prescription drugs, and then somebody got the genius idea to give him a meth to cut back on the side effects of the other drugs. There's a doctor you don't want. I think he hurried up his campaign that cost him, I don't know if he would have won eventually anyway, but certainly cost him. But the people in this country that were lining up, now I'm not saying that they had pictures of, Dachau and ignored them. I'm not going to accuse them of that, because I don't think anybody thought at that time that things were going to get that far out of hand. But it's not like the guy didn't say they were. I mean, there were people lining up here to have a much bigger country. They would love to deal with a Germany that now, by the way, had Czechoslovakia under their wing, or Poland, instead of having to do business with Poland and Germany. I mean, Joe Kennedy was one of them, Lindbergh. They were lining up to do business with the guy, and he basically went too fast and blew it. I don't think there'd be any question that if he would have hung in there and waited till 1948 to start taking places over, that we'd have been in with that guy like Flynn, like we are with the Chinese. If there's money involved, it's not like this is new. People think this way. If we could sell, I mean, at one point I read, Lou, that if there was 70% of the world, if you got shot by a bullet, the bullet was probably made in America. I mean, it's not like we're not willing to sell guns to some guy in Africa who's chopping people's arms off. We'll do that in a second, won't we?
Well, we'll do it. No, you can't just walk out and sell arms to somebody. You're allowed to sell arms, and we've used our arms sales as a way of promoting our international interests on the theory that, and this has been borne out by, for example, Iran, on the theory that if we equip your military and you suddenly turn on us, you're going to have a tough time. And this has been played out in Iran. It's playing out in Turkey right now. And so, I mean, I understand. it's a very Machiavellian, Metternichian kind of policy, but it makes perfect sense. You can't run out and just sell arms to people. There's lots of federal control.
I noticed I was very careful. I didn't say we sold them to the guy. What I said was it was made in America. It gets there.
It can, and so that, you know, that's another issue that we have to worry about, and that's why we tend to be very careful with what we release. And that's another, by the way, another chapter in the China story.
Yeah.
Is the industrial espionage that's been levied against the United States by China in these key areas. I mean, it's no accident the Chinese space program is, you know, where it is right now.
All right, Luke,
having the kind of false starts we did.
We don't have much time, but I have a quick question. We got 2 minutes.
By the way, let me raise one other thing.
Right.
I'm just going to throw this out on the impeachment. You know, where is John Roberts? And that's all I'm going to say.
Yes, I was going to ask you that, but to me, why can't we just censure the guy for not having any common sense on a particular day and say and be done with it, go back to doing whatever they're supposed to be doing, what they don't want to do?
Because the censure doesn't allow them to drag all this stuff out and put all the video up and conduct a trial, and I put that word in quotation marks, in the Senate in an unconstitutional forum, because, again, the Chief Justice isn't there, and the Constitution says you're going to do an impeachment when on an official. You have to have the chief, or a president, you have to have the Chief Justice there. I think that's the reason they have completely politicized this, and unfortunately in doing it, they cheapen the message and they directly subvert the impact. And again, maybe
why are they immune to that? Because I feel the same way. Even though I'm a absolutely anti-Trump guy as a person, I think this is crazy. I mean, what are we doing?
Well, I think this is driven by one, Trump hatred, but number two, I think the Democrats they have calculated that the best way they can avoid a collapse in the 2022 midterms is to keep Donald Trump as the face of the Republican Party, and this is one way to do it.
It's not going to work.
In the limelight, try to provoke him and try to tag as many people as they can with Donald Trump image.
All right. We can talk about this one next week. I have one quick question. When you talk about giving aid to China, again, we'll carry this over to next week. If you're not going to go on a war footing, how can you tell Boeing to not give China the specs for the whole plane if China says, I need the specs for the whole plane and I want to make the tail because if you want me to buy 5787s and Boeing says, I'll take that deal? How do you as a government stop that without going onto some kind of a war footing?
You use the Export Control Act, and you go to Boeing and say, elements of your design on the tail of this aircraft have direct application to military aircraft, and accordingly you can't export them.
All right, so if they do, but we're not willing to put the chairman of Boeing in jail, or the board, or anybody. We have shown no ability to spank anybody at that level, and don't want to.
Agreed.
So, I mean, we've got enough laws, Lou. We don't have any enforcement, right?
The question is, that's how you do it. If Boeing violates that, then you can start throwing people in jail.
But we won't. But, all right, we're going to talk about this next week, Lou. Hey, don't come to Chicago this week. It's cold.
I read that.
All right, bud. Talk at you.
Take care.
SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 65. Come back with Dan Janitas.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, Innovation and Human Resources, licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson, at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. We have Weber on the board. We have Mr. Dan Janitas from Kratos Capital with us. S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 67. Individual stocks in the Dow, nothing is standing out. We're actually slowing down here a little bit. United Healthcare up $1.30. That's about the only one that's up or down more than a dollar. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I don't really mind the cold so much, Dan, but after, what are we, day seven now, Maddie, with no end in sight. This is getting boring.
I had to turn up my air conditioning a little bit last night, so I'm sure I'm not going to get much sympathy for you when I tell you that it's in the 80s here.
Well, you know, you're not. Well, Chicago, normally here, the weather is such that even when you get a snowstorm or something, a few days later, at least you're above freezing, 33, 34, the sun comes down and everything's, but even in, I got a big, huge honking 2500 Suburban, right? So, but even in the alley, the chunks of snow are still hard as a rock. They haven't softened up at all. So if you hit one, I'm bouncing around. I can only imagine what people with like a regular car, how they're trying to maneuver around here. I don't think for instance, our producer, Mr. Matt Weber, marries a young lady, terrific young lady who happens to own a Jeep. So he, of course, leaves his car, is still buried, right, Maddie? And you're driving around in poor Jill's Jeep.
That's right.
He's got it figured out.
Yeah, know? I'm not digging it out.
I mean, when he advertised for a wife, it was like, I'm looking for a wife with Jeep. Please send picture of Jeep. Just saying.
Perfect.
Dan,
well, the requirement.
I wanted to ask you, actually, you had a picture of Jill, you'd propose with the picture, for God's sake. She's a doll.
Great.
I'm looking at bonds here. What is this creep, and I know it's to those of us here, it seems like nothing. But what is the international implication of this Japan creeping here? Because this has been like decades. These guys have been zero or right there, and now every week we're up a tenth of a point. I mean, in terms of real money, I guess it doesn't mean all that much, but it has to be turning the way business is being done in Japan quite dramatically. I mean, in terms of who's paying who? No, I was paying you. Now you're paying me. I mean, when you switch from one side of zero to the other, now the Bund is still minus 0.46, so they're a ways away. But what do you think's happening in Japan? I mean, you know more about this than I do. What do you think is the internal workings of this going positive now?
Yeah, I mean, it's a positive development. And I think you said it correctly. It's sort of a creeping along, and certainly, moving to getting out of the negative rate environment is a positive, especially for banks and financial institutions and for getting business done. So it's a positive, and I think maybe the timing is good as well as the global economy improves. So I think it can only be of benefit. And the fact that it's not happening in a sudden, you know, I'm not seeing sudden movements, but we've been seeing gradual movements, I think, is also a strong positive. So investors are not going to perceive this. Investors are going to have a little more confidence in the direction of rates in Japan because it's, you know, it has been over a period of time. And it's sort of the same thing here a little bit. I mean, we're a little bit behind that, but the same type of thing is happening here. I don't think it's going to be runaway, but I think in the short run we are going to see a stepping in, you know, as inflation steps in a little and as the yield curve continues to steepen. You know, I know there's a 30-year deal coming today that's likely to get done just because people are looking for yield. So, I would view it more as a positive.
Dan, how
I'm
do
not
you
sure
I'd
view it as an investment opportunity for what
no, no, God, not
we
yet.
Do or,
yeah.
or for our client base? But I would see I would say that it, you know globally it's a good thing. Although they've kind of Japan has kind of been in their own space for many years. You know, they've been in this, they've been dealing with negative rates for a lot longer than the rest of the country and certainly than, say, Europe and the U.S. So, they've been in a somewhat different predicament, but it's, you know, I view it as a positive.
Dan, what, you just said something, regarding banks do better with, when the rates go up, and you'll hear that, you know, 100 times a day if you listen closely to TV. And if I was going to do an economic paper, theoretically, I would agree with you 100%. I was going to say 110%, but I'm not some dumb sports guy. You can't be 110. I'm 100%. Yet, I'm going to say that what you just said and what I just agreed with in the last 5 to 10 years has been flat ass wrong. That the banks, the way this has worked out on a practical scale, the banks have made out like a bandit. Because I actually did some work, Dan, since 2008, I think on average, now they've come down a little bit in the last 6 months, credit card rates were up and not down. And, I mean, the idea of banks not paying anybody, not paying anybody any interest, a few years ago, some of the banks, I know Harris did, if you got less than $5,000 in your account, they're charging you $15 a month. And so you are, for all practical purposes, you're paying to have your money in a bank here. And those guys, people, the tradesmen that I know say, I'm paying as much or more than I did 20 years ago to get a loan for like a third plumbing truck or something. I know mortgages are down, and I suspect some stuff might be down. If you're a big enough company, I guess your short-term financing in a bank is probably down. But the fact is, it didn't work its way down for people. I mean, in a lot of ways. I mean, the spread between negative and 25% on a credit card, I don't think any bank's ever done better than that. The mob didn't do that good, for God's sake.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but credit cards are, again, they're kind of in their own category. You know, we look at mortgages, we look at other loans, small business loans. You know, we're going to see a tighter spread. And you're exactly right. I mean, it's kind of crazy to see 25-plus percentage rate still on credit cards to still have that type of, but that's how they stay in business. And that's, you know, we are in a, you know, we've been in an economy where people like to put money on credit. I mean, it's, you know, the alternative of savings is not terrific because if, you know, the savings rates are so low and, people spend, you know, people have been spending. That hasn't really slowed down.
Well, you know,
there's some positives to that. Besides the fact that credit card companies are making money, I mean, there's some positives to the fact that you know, we do have people spending, we do have more liquidity coming into the system. But I definitely, I hear you and I agree with you that there's a certain point where, you know, that's a pretty substantial spread, because, you know, it's a, you know, I don't know, going back to just sort of finance 101 and sort of learning how to put some money aside. And if it's not going to be in your savings account, it's going to be in, you know, some preferred stocks, for example.
Right, right, right.
Or in something that's paying something right now. Or certainly in, you know, just in the market in general, even if you've just had exposure to the market in the last few years, you would have, you know, kind of have that as a hedge against the, you know, the spread that you're paying on your credit cards.
Oh, sure.
Have some involvement. You know, there is a, you know, we talk about the fear of missing out, there is just frankly missing out. And the people who have missed out here, even if, you know, those people who, you start young, you know, you start early, and you participate, and over time, and it's proven itself out, you will make money in the stock market. You know, even if you come in at the wrong point, you know, you dollar cost average in over time, and you're going to make money. You're going to make 8 to 10% over time, and that hasn't changed. And it's hard to convince anyone who's in the market right now that's changing. So, you know, staying, you know, participating, investing, you know, watching your spending, you know, and realizing that credit card companies are doing quite well, you know, just understanding that. But that's,
well, I think the part of it, a lot of listeners send me all this stuff, Dan, and from different walks of life, and there's going to be people, and we all know them, and that will pay and put stuff on a credit card and maybe, you know, don't mind it, okay, so much, but an appreciable number of people, I guess, I can't put a percentage on it. Whenever they get a credit card, they don't really care what the interest rate is because in their mind, they're never going to use it for that purpose. They're going to pay it off every month. And all of a sudden, you get any kind of a medical expense or something, then all of a sudden you're using it and you're saying, wow, I agreed to 30%. Well, the only reason why you did that is because you never dreamed you were going to use it.
Right, it's money that's accessible too. It's money that's there, and it's a lot of people don't really understand, you know, that you know, it becomes very difficult to pay down 25% and 30% credit card bills. They just, you know, they're snowballs and they just get getting bigger, and it's like you said, one time it can really get you off of it can upset your budget. Let's put it that way, and it can get you so. You know, obviously that's the goal is to pay off monthly, you know, live within your means is what I've always said, have emergency funds set up 6 months of your pay, and, you know, you won't have to worry about those situations.
So Dan, let's put it this way. I'm stuck like I am in 1999. The reason being is all the action is in the stocks that my people don't necessarily have. A lot of them, I mean, I'm an index guy. I mean, obviously, if you ask me about Apple and all these other companies, I could probably give you a pretty good rendition. But I have a couple of younger guys that I help out with their option stuff. And they lob these stocks at me, and I'm going, what is this thing? Well, it was $10 4 weeks ago. Now it's like 80. I'm like, I feel like the, I mean, and you find some of these places, but
right.
How the hell do you keep track? I mean, how do you know? I mean, I was looking at this marijuana place yesterday, it's Tilray. The volatility is 350.
Right.
But yet again, and it's not unusual. I see 5 or 10 of these a day, and you know what? Man, I don't know any one of them. I mean, they're all the stocks that are going crazy now are out of the, you know, anybody's portfolio that would have had a portfolio that's 5 years old.
I mean, I think some of it's time horizon, right? So we've always been used to a longer term time horizon. That's the way you're raised, that's the way that you're raised as an institutional portfolio manager. You're not looking at, we might be looking at some quick plays, you know, some quick trades in and out that are pretty obvious, you know, to add a little yield around the edges, but, you know, a little return around the edges. But generally we're going to be looking for names that are going to be around for a while. There's a lot of excitement, and you're exactly right, from an investing group of people who really can be incredibly intelligent, but maybe really don't have the experience of trading that we have, and have the decades of experience, and knowing how the sentiment of investors changes over time. And a lot of the names that people get hung up on or get excited about aren't necessarily going to be good companies, you know, even if they're well run, or good stocks. And we had explored the cannabis industry a few years ago, and I did a lot of research, and the couple of names that came out on top for me, I actually, you know, got to know management really well, and they had been consultants to the industry for a long time, and, you know, there was a lawyer and a couple of businessmen from the Boston area that I think really had it done right, and their business didn't make it. So, I mean, we were quite happy that we didn't get involved. So we did a lot of upfront homework, and that's what we do in general. The conferences that I talk about that I go to, and they're almost weekly at this point, give you an opportunity to talk to senior management of a lot of companies. Looking at the small and mid-sized companies is where we see a lot of growth. It, the obvious growth is coming in the higher, you know, the larger companies in the tech sector, but, you know, you want to diversify. And the yield, if you can find yield in some of these smaller and mid-sized companies as well, and you can find good cash flow, these are going to be the names that are your steady eddies during downturns. The period of time that we've just been through the last couple of weeks has been interesting, but there's still, you know, a number of the names that we've participated in have really done well. They've really held their own. A number of the names that we've talked about. One statistic that came out this week, I don't know if you heard, but the average return, the average yield on a high-yield bond right now is less than 4%. I mean, less than 4%.
Yeah, well,
that's the lowest it's ever been. I've been a high-yield manager for 35 years, and that is really hard to get comfortable with. And so the question that you've been asking me for you know, for months now is, you know, where do you go for income? And I would say to the listeners, preferred stocks still look attractive. You know, the couple of names that I've been mentioning all along, the Chicken Soup for the Soul, the Blue Knight, dividend yield still around 10%. Stock prices have traded up, you know, 10%. Nothing exciting, but you're getting a nice fat dividend, and they've been paying. But there's one story I do want to mention, because I brought this up a few weeks ago, and it's a company called SWM. That's their ticker, and it's not SWN, the gas company that we own. It's SWM, and they have a dividend yield of about 4.6%. They're you know, they do applied materials. We talked about filtration systems. They make the paper for medical masks, and you know, so they have a medical division. They do infrastructure. They put all that material on roads when they're trying to push back the, you know, when they're building out new roads and highways. They also have a business that does engineered papers, which is makes the papers for cigarettes and cigars, and that's been a cash cow. But anyways, the business itself is solid, really good management team, good 4.6% dividend yield. We took a look at the bonds. Now here's what's going on in today's world that I think is really important to see. They have a 5-year bond that pays a 6 7/8 coupon. We thought, oh, if you can get this thing at 5%, that would be great. And we took a little closer look at it. You'd have to pay a really high premium, like close to 109, to be able to buy it. And that's giving you a 2% yield.
That's 2% wild. That's wild.
On the bond, which is rated B2, B+. This is a high-yield bond, aka junk bond, that there has been so much demand for that it's brought the price up to 109, the yield down to 2%. You can own the common and get twice as much yield on the dividend, have the upside, a lot more upside, and not be taking the, you know, the risk of buying, you know, paying a, you know, this sort of premium. So there's a story to be told here in terms of, you know, just this huge demand for yield, and even at the expense of looking at some good dividend paying stocks. So I think this is a good time to focus more on the alternatives, rather than trying to chase yield and, you know, going down the credit spectrum to chase yield or being satisfied with 2%. If that's not really going to meet your income goal, you can meet your income goal with other investments. Now, we talked before also about some of the REITs, you know, V&Q, ACRE, and SELF, which are three we've talked about, you know, have all done quite well recently. You know, there was a little bit of hiccups after all the COVID hit last year with what was going to happen with commercial real estate, but these stocks seem to have come back nicely, and they've come back again in the last few weeks because there's again this push for yield and diversification, and now people are realizing that office space can be used, you know, there can be other uses for it. So there's and there's land under those buildings. So you just have to shift a little bit your thinking and when you're actually doing your exploring out there, not going into areas that are esoteric that you don't understand, but sticking with things that make a lot of sense. You know, sticking with the name that is A Chicken Soup for the Soul, which is entertainment, which is an entertainment company that's paying a 10% dividend, that's well run, that has assets. You know, not being as concerned, you know, not trying to get into some new, not trying to do too much leveraging in this environment, because you could really get stuck if you go in that direction.
I'm getting this feeling that you're working harder and harder to get to the same place.
You are. You absolutely are. You're having to do a little more work. I mean, we enjoy the exploration part of it. You know, another name I'll throw out, another preferred, it's Truist Financial Corp. It's the old BB&T. They have a preferred out there that's paying 5.25, 5.15. And that's a good solid company.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Good steady Eddie. It's kind of not moved a whole lot. It's been up maybe a point or two over the last few months, but you're collecting a nice dividend. There are places to go, but you do have to work harder. There's no question.
How many times when you looked at, I meant this point, Dan, and please kick me if I'm wrong. It almost doesn't matter. Whatever you're talking about, being it's baseball cards, being if it's pickup trucks, people are justifying, well, this pickup truck is worth X because it's in good shape. The thing was in good shape 5 years ago when it was younger, and I could get it for $6,000, and now it's 11. You know, I mean, it's good that it's in good shape, right? It's good that it's a good company. But I'm looking at these marijuana places. I'm not saying that they're not going to be good places. I got to believe that you, on a steady basis, as you go in and analyze these places, you come out and say, I really like this company. I wish it was $10 and it's trading 80. I mean, I bet you run into that every week.
Yeah, that's a lot of it, because that's a big part of our decision as investment managers. It's not just whether we like the company, it's how it's priced. And I think we have a third leg to our trading, the way we view it, and we call it trading. So how does it trade on top of that? And, you know, most things are trading with good liquidity right now, but, you have to, if you want to get into something that's less liquid, you really have to understand the trading parameters and what it's going to be like if you get stuck with a name that doesn't trade frequently. But yeah, that's, you know, being in an industry, assuming that a company is going to do well just because it's in the right industry is not not good investing. It's not good long-term investing. You really have to dig in and get to know management and see their strategic vision and see how they're going to pay you. You know, how are you going to get paid as a shareholder? How are you going to get paid as a bondholder? How are you going to get paid as a bondholder? So those are the questions you got to ask and the research you got to do. And like I said, going through the analysis on the cannabis side, it seemed like there was a huge amount of upside, but it wasn't just the regulatory issues. I think there were other issues. There were challenges that a lot of these companies were facing. There were certain, you know, barriers to entry not being that high in the industry. I frankly, just going through my own analysis, when I met with a half dozen companies and kind of got to see the whole process, realized that there was still a lot of challenges in the processes, if you will. And I know here in Florida, a lot of them have shut down already. A lot of the dispensaries, for example, have shut down. They may be doing well in other parts of the country.
Yeah, have they been able to access the banking system? Well, that was a big, I actually helped a couple people here in that. You couldn't put money in a bank here. Depending on your bank's,
right.
your bank's regulatory group, if they're totally anal, they wouldn't let anybody in the place. Even like personal stuff in the place. Of people
right.
that own, you know, I mean, if you own stock in one, they wouldn't let you have a personal account in there. I mean,
right.
It's crazy.
Using a credit card or the facility having a bank account. You're right, exactly. And that kind of challenges your outside growth.
Well, and especially if you're a partner and they're trying to toss your personal account out because you own stock in one of them. I mean, they went that far in a couple of places here. I mean, I don't know where they got off doing that, but I mean, there's people in these banks now. They read this dad friend. The favorite word for everybody is no. I mean, we won't let you do anything. I mean, you know, some credit unions did it in a couple of states. I think they did that in Colorado. But, I mean, it was a real big deal. I mean, otherwise, I mean, people were hauling essentially a briefcase full of cash to the state and giving them their taxes in cash.
Huge amount of taxes. Yeah, that's been another big issue as well. But when I saw one of the better names that I had been following not make it, I kind of lost interest in the industry and think that it might just be time. And also, the industry may have to do some restructuring and reorganization before it becomes a more viable investment opportunity long term.
We don't have that much time. Have you done any work? We're actually doing some stuff here. My brother's kind of leading the charge on this. He's got a group of people that are putting together. It's not a fund or anything, but they're trying eventually to make one, I guess. But they're trying to get somewhat of a track record, and they're picking up all these companies that they think are going to be part of the electronic car revolution, whatever you want to call it, all the battery companies, all these other guys, and they're trying to put together a basket for that. Do you do any work in those areas? I imagine you have, or some of your place has.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some money. When we invest in an area like that, what I would call innovative, we've done very well in some of the ARC funds, ARK, or ARC ETFs. They have ARKK, the innovative one, and those are pools of innovative companies, and you're able to diversify your risk away from one specific company, and you can get into sub-pools, if you will, with specific subsectors, like electronic cars, or Genomic Revolution, which was another one that they were in. So getting into those sort of subspaces, but staying diversified, like you said, having a pool of names and not putting all your money in one specific company. I think, you know, there is upside. There's no question. My feeling about the electronic car in general is that there's still some time to play out. I mean, once the airplanes start flying more frequently, it's going to take a while before we're going to see an electronic airplane. And, we still have transportation methods that require fossil fuel, and we're in a transition. And, we frankly, in this part of Florida where I live, I don't see any, stations for electric vehicles to fill up other than the, car dealerships.
No, you still got to be able to fill your up. You got to go in certain miles per home. Dan, thank you. Well, I think what we should do is go all electric in the cars. We should tear down all our power plants.
Well, it's going to take some time.
Take care, buddy. Talk to you next week. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 74. Come back with Mr. Frank Fahey.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 708- 888-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Jackson. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 13. You said the jobless numbers came out. They were, what, 793, Manny? They were a little less than last
793
week.
793 versus 760 expected.
But last week was, what, 805 or something? It was a little, I think it was a little over 8 last week. So I guess that's good.
That's good, but still 33,000 above expectation isn't great.
Who are all these expectators?
Yes.
Dow Futures up 83. I still love that line from Richard J. Daly. Who are all these alligators? DAX up 99.7%. FTSE down 1. Call that flat. CAC round up 2. Call that flat. Asia, we've got the mainland China doing well here, but Nikkei up 57. They're 29,562. Their tip top was 36,000 back in the, say the 90s. Shanghai up 51, 1.4%. Hang Seng up 134.4%. So Shanghai is leading the league over there. Yesterday, the Dow was up 61, closed at a record level, 31,437. S&P down 1, and NASDAQ down 35. So it was kind of a slow day yesterday, actually. Bonds, 1.14. The Bund, minus 0.46. These are, like, hardly any change at all. And Japan is positive 0.07 for the first time in a long, long time. Oil, down 39 cents, 58.29. Brent's still over 61, but it's down 41 cents to 61.06. Natural gas up 9 cents, over $3, 3.004. Again, a great trade if you'd have bought that about 4 months ago. RBOB down a penny, 163. We've got gold up 4.470, now 18.47. Silver up 20 cents. This is a recent rally here. Came with these numbers. 27.28. Copper up a penny, 3.78. And then we got to do the crypto, I guess. Bitcoin now up 29.11. It's up 6%, 47,690. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on that overturned semi, semi-double tractor trailer with the rear trailer on its side. Has the eastbound I-80 interstate closed at US 30, which is exit 137 and Francis Road. It's backed up to the Des Plaines River Bridge right now, and this has been closed for the better part of an hour with crews working to get this semi back on its upright position and out of the way. But I-80 on the eastbound side is completely jammed up near Joliet and as you're approaching I-55, so you'll want to avoid that if at all possible. No issues on the Dan Ryan until you start to approach downtown, then you'll see some red. Same for Stevenson. I-57 and the Bishop Ford are looking okay. Eisenhower, slow travel times, but no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy, as traffic volumes are starting to pick up this week. It seems more and more people are returning to work. So that's affecting our traffic. Off the expressways, a couple of crashes to report. 91st Street at Cass Avenue, there's an accident. Just west of there, Route 53 and 83rd Street, there is a crash. And then north of there, near Carroll Stream, Schick Road at Thorn Road, there is an accident as well. Weather today, some sunshine early and then clouds later on. Could see some more snow flurries. Still very cold, a high of just 22 as we can continue this stretch of below freezing. It looks like we won't have a chance to get above freezing until February 22nd, which is still 11 days from now.
You're kidding.
No, not kidding.
This is going to be 20 days below freezing in February. That has never been happened before. I can't imagine.
Right now, it's mostly clear and 9 degrees downtown with a wind chill right around zero. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 77. Right now, it's clear and 47. In sports, the Bulls beat the Pelicans last night, 129-116. Suns edged out the Bucks, 125-124. Blackhawks were off. They'll welcome Columbus into town tonight. That's a 7 p.m. puck drop at the United Center. And in college hoops, Northwestern looked like they were going to get a nice win up in Evanston, snapping their 9-game losing streak as they had a 14-point lead on Indiana at home and then blew that lead before losing in double overtime, 79-76. The Wildcats have lost 10 in a row in the Big Ten after a 3-0 start. Chief.
Manny, what does the Big Ten standings look like?
Right now, Michigan's in first place, but they haven't played in 2 weeks because of a COVID pause. They're 8-1. Illinois is in second place at 9-3. Ohio State is virtually tied with Illinois at 10-4. And then you have Wisconsin at 9-5 and Iowa at 8-5. So those are your top five.
Purdue, not there.
Purdue is right there also. They're 8-5 as well, but they lose the tiebreaker to Iowa, so they're in sixth.
Okay.
But yeah, there's seven ranked teams. Rutgers would be the seventh ranked team. They're 7-7 in the conference, ranked 25th. And they're projecting 10 teams right now in the tournament, but could get as many as 12, depending on how it plays out.
Wow.
If there's only 64 teams still playing when the tournament comes around.
Right.
Yeah.
College basketball is almost unwatchable this year. I've tried, and it stinks.
Without the fans.
Not just Notre Dame.
Yeah, without the fans, it really is different, because that's what makes college great, is the atmospheres and in the arenas, and you don't have any of that. And then you factor in the Dukes and the Kentuckys and the Kansas and the North Carolinas are nowhere near as good as they normally are, so you lose that element as well.
I mean, Duke lost to a bad Notre Dame team.
Yeah, at home.
Well, what is the I don't want to go there, but they're talking about the COVID, but if there's any sort of logic, any sort of why can we have students that are tested, like, how often? Why could they go to the football games and they can't go to basketball games?
Outside versus inside.
Because you can do natural distancing in a stadium of 60,000 with 10,000 people.
And it's outdoors versus indoors.
All right. Well, how does that... But the same logic says it's fine to be in an airplane because they tell you that it's safer to be in the airplane than outside.
Who's they? The airplane?
The airplane companies.
Manufacturers and the airlines?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're getting away with it.
Well, give them another $15 billion.
They're getting away with it.
Right. That doesn't make it right.
Well, I understand.
Trump's going to get away with it, and it doesn't make it right.
Well, he's going to get away with being Trump, which he was from the beginning. You know.
Oh, my God.
We
get what we deserve.
That's, I don't know if you were listening earlier.
Poor Larry Flint finally expired today.
Yeah. By the way, so what are you going to do? Is there going to be an empty spot at your house on Thanksgiving? He was always a hero of yours.
Nah, not me. But I hear it's hard on his friends and family.
I love that movie, though, The People versus Larry Flint, that came out
in,
I think, the 90s, late 90s. Woody Harrelson played Larry Flint, and it sort of recapped his whole life and how he built the magazine and then obviously the Supreme Court case and then him getting shot and being paralyzed. But it was a real, and drug addiction and everything else. It was a really good movie.
There were a couple of guys who got shot. Who was the politician? He died a while ago. The guy from
George Wallace.
Yeah,
got shot.
Yeah. It was, you know,
how come we don't see as many assassination attempts these days? Is the security that much better? It seemed like
probably
when you guys were growing up, someone would get shot like every other week.
Well, the 68.
It's every other day here in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about politicians and stuff, not. Regular people.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I'm not so sure we want to go back to that.
I don't either, but
well,
I can't.
We can go back to when people would actually say what they believe, not what somebody wanted them to say.
Well, that's...
So you would upset people.
Yeah, that's the truth.
I wonder if that's part of it.
It was interesting that you talk about the, one of the most fascinating things, they have this kind of crazy stuff on the History Channel, And if you ever want to look at just how people are to other people, the history of pornography is fascinating. I mean, not looking at the stuff for everything. I was a big pornography guy, but the one of the most interesting stories I ever read is the Supreme Court came out. What was the one, Justice Frank? He said, "I can't define it, but if I can, I can tell you what it is when I see it." Was that, was either?
Was that Oliver Wendell Holmes?
Somebody like that. It was a big, big, big time guy. So I was watching this history of it. You know, it all started with the mob and the blue movies and the little 16 millimeter and all that, or 8 millimeter. And, you know, it was, you know, all way back. And if you ever saw that stuff, you'd say, wow, what is that crap? But, the one of the bigger cases was somehow or another they got to this community standard thing. And I remember when it happened, Frank, but I never know how you define it. But Maddie, somehow you could, it would, based on your community standards, you could say something was pornography or not let.
You know. By the way, it was said by Justice Potter Stewart.
Potter Stewart.
In 1964. Well, I know it when I see it.
Yeah, I know it when I see it. You know, there's some.
Now, here's an interesting side. I used to go to Boston all the time when I worked for Digital Equipment, and I got to see all the great jazz keyboard players, organists, and it was because in Boston, women could not strip to recorded music, but they could strip to live music because that was art.
I love that.
Well, they have this, somebody decides they're going to throw an adult bookstore in Provo, Utah, which is the it's not Salt Lake City that's the real hotbed of Mormonism. It's Provo, right? So they put this adult bookstore, and they've got the obligatory kind of heavy set lady district attorney, right? And she's on them like white on rice. You know, we talk about out of central casting, and she's winning this case on community standards. This is what our community believes in. So the attorney basically is getting his ass kicked from the adult bookstore. So he looks out the window, and across the street, I don't know if it was a Marriott or something, but there's this huge hotel. And he goes, I wonder. He knows somebody. I'm not positive it was Marriott. It might have been one of the other ones. And he goes,
good chance it's Marriott if it's in Provo.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. And so he calls one of his buddies or one of his girlfriend's buddies or somebody at Marriott, and they find out that the Marriott in Provo, the one he's looking at, had something like 2 to 3 times as many per night person in a room, people that rented the X-rated movie. So he goes back in and he changes his whole case around and he says, I don't know what community you're talking about, but this particular place right across the street has 3 times as many porn flicks per person. And he ended up winning the case because she couldn't prove that the community standards are what she thought they were. They actually were the community standards, the people in the hotel, they're going there and renting porn movies one after another. So he won it on her not being, her idea that community standard wasn't anybody else's. I don't know if she was jealous or what, but well, it's a fascinating.
Growing up, we used to have our Sunday visitor come into our house. I couldn't see Kapaloo because it was condemned.
Oh yeah,
by the bishops.
Maddie, it's long before your, here was the New World. Was the Catholic newspaper. And in there, on page 3 or 4, every week was a list of all the movies that had come out and how they were rated.
And it was by the Legion of Decency.
Yeah, it was the Legion of Decency. And we couldn't go see, there was a B and there was an, I don't remember what they were, but we had, before we went to the thing, my stepfather made us look in there and see if the movie was any good.
God forbid you went to the Midnight Cowboy.
Oh God. Oh yeah. It was a, we would talk about a classic. That one was John Voight, right? Was that his first big role?
I am not sure.
I think it might have been. It was him and
I didn't see the movie, Tom.
Oh, I ended up seeing it. It was bad. The guy died on the bus.
And I'm Curious Yellow was the end of the world.
Oh God, yeah, you couldn't go see anything like that. but then again, all those movies in the '70s, they all had. If you were in that, you were undressing at some point. There wasn't a movie out there that didn't have somebody undressed somewhere. Now you don't see any of that. But anyway,
Harold and Maude was one that didn't.
Yeah, there were a couple. all right, Frank, we got to talk about markets. You're a market guy. The news came out with are we getting just really comfortable with China going to be open again? Biden doesn't seem to care. We've got money pouring in. Powell yesterday, I already said it once on the show, but I'll, Cliff Notes version. How that man has that job, I would love to be. He has that job. I should be able to play quarterback next week in the NFL if the NFL is playing next week. I mean,
or you could have taken Larry Kudlow's place too.
Yeah, well, he said he goes. at one point in an off-the-cuff remark, he says, come on, in the last 20 years, there's been no real inflation. God, Frank, I'm just a putz doing this show, and I can tell you three or four spots where the inflation in the last 20 years has been dramatic. Housing
is
doubled.
I can tell you in the past year where it's been dramatic.
Yeah, I don't even know what he's
talking about. Cuts are $9.99 a pound across the border unless they're on sale at Jewel.
Well, I'm saying that
they were $6.99 for the premium.
But now,
see now,
you're missing how they're going to cast you off like a feather. They're saying that's the new word is transitory. That's just because of the pandemic. That's why your coal cuts are that high. In a year, they'll be back down. It's transitory. How's that word for you learned today?
And oil is at a 13-month high.
Transitory. No.
I have a senior transitory pass.
Yes. but I mean, he's totally missing health care. He's totally missing tuition. He's totally missing housing prices that have doubled. I mean, what is he
looking? Property taxes.
What do you think? Well, cars got to have doubled. Property taxes.
Oh, I know they have, because I bought a car 3 years ago, and I'm shopping right now, and it's like, wait a minute. I should have bought a new Subaru 3 years ago, and it wouldn't have depreciated a penny.
It would not have. It would not have. You remember, this is not politically correct, but you remember Scummy?
Yes. Scott.
Scott, what's his last name? Scott, anyway, yes. Real good, real nice guy. I ended up playing golf with him. I was a sub for his group down at Silver Lake, but this is how, when you're on the trading floor, it wasn't all politically correct. Scott picked his acronym as SCM. I don't know how he didn't realize that he would be Scummy for the rest of his life, but he is. And so his son is coming back from Iraq, or one of those places, had a couple of tours, and he's a carpenter. So I had just bought this 3/4 ton, 2,500 pickup, because my parents had, my stepfather just died, my mom, and so we were cleaning the house out, so we had, hauling stuff around. So I buy this thing in Arizona. Plus, I'd never been to Arizona. I never took Route 66 back. So I figured I could do all those bucket shop things at one time. So I do all that stuff. And the thing is, it's in good shape. It's got like 80,000 miles. It was just basic roll-up windows, basic. So Scummy says, hey, my son needs a heavy-duty pickup. You don't need two trucks. How about selling him yours? I said, yeah, I really don't need it anymore. The house I'll clean out. He goes, well, how much you want for it? I said, why don't we go on Blue Book, figure out what the person-to-person price is. And it was like $6,000. Next day I had a check. He had the truck. When you do business with somebody on the trading floor, Frank, it was very easy to do, right? He never said, I'm going to check Kelly Lubuck and make sure you're not stiffing me. I told him it was $6,000. It was $6,000, right? That's the way that's the way people were when you did business with them every day like that. So I'm going to say that truck today, Frank, easily 10.5. Easily 10.5 with more miles on it. And that was 6 years ago, 7 years ago.
My Honda Element remained the same price used for the past 6 years, $7,000.
Yeah. Well, that's why if you can buy, I don't know if you can do it now, but if you there's a window. This is not an education in trucks, but it's going to show you whatever you're doing, whether it's stocks, whatever it is. Do yourself a little research. I mean, I like buying older trucks, right? There's a spot in there, Frank. When you first buy one, of course, it depreciates pretty rapidly, right? And most of the time, like you're saying now, the last few years, maybe not so much. But there's a window in there where between like 60,000 miles and 90,000 miles or 95, you can buy something and own it for 3 years if you get the sweet spot, and your cost of the 3 years is almost nothing. It's $1,000 a year or something if you do it just right. If you buy it like a way later, or I'm saying there's a number in there where if you pay $11,000 or something, it's nice. If it's still running and you keep it nice for another 50,000 miles, you can sell it for $8,000, right?
Yeah, get your WeatherTech mat.
Yeah, so but I'm gonna say all that stuff is off the board. But hey, while you're here, I wanted to ask you. I was looking at this. I was looking because one of the people that I do business with had some stock in this. Tilray, and I'm not touting the thing at all. I'm saying this is the last of the most recent of like 10 stocks these guys have given me to look at for them, and every one of them is 200, 300 volatility, Frank. I mean, It's unbelievable. This one was like 350 yesterday, implied volatility. I mean, I was looking at some of the old close ratioed vertical spreads I used to do as a market maker. I don't know if anybody does those things anymore. But I mean, the risk is there because you got naked shorts, which of course I would never do for any of my people. But I'm sitting there. I was doing a 5x6 ratio. I did last night on a $10 spread. You did it for 850 credit, and your break even was $40 higher. And that's 2 weeks.
I mean, so let's see, $40 higher on GameStop right now.
Well, yeah. Well, like I'm saying,
it's $91, and the high was $400 in the past 3 weeks.
Well, yeah,
that's why it doesn't work.
Well, I mean, if you were smart enough, and had the time, if you had a list of 30 of these in front of you, and you did every one of them 5x6. I'll bet you get five ones where they stuck it where the sun don't shine, but I'll bet you're net positive on it. If you did it rationally.
They aren't going to let you do it if you're a retail trader.
Right. Well, that's why.
I was looking at these spreads in GameStop. You know, I'm going, God, this is a beautiful broken wing butterfly. You can't lose money on it. Except they're marked, the options are 350 volatility. It's unspeakably wide because they're probably in a fast market every day, and people are marking it, so you can't trust the midpoint as being where you can really do the
trade. You and I have a couple of acquaintances. Because we've let a few people take over the entire market, that the marks at night, they're so wide that the OCC spends many, many man-hours every night just trying to put decent marks together on some of the stuff so people don't get buried on the marks. They essentially remark stuff, Frank, because the marks are so horrible.
Right. They run a theoretical model.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I look at some of the stuff and it's from Mars. And that's why that kid offed himself.
Yeah.
The bad information. Kevin misworded that. The company is at fault at a certain level there.
Well, I mean, it's... I don't know what you the company is at fault in some ways, but somehow or another, Frank, and as you know, this hits close to home. If you're a full service firm like PTI, you have all this responsibility to people. If you're an electronic firm, you don't know people squat, and I don't get that. Back in 2008, and it was a listener to the show. He comes in. And he shows up one day, and he says, first of all, he had a problem. I don't remember the guy's name, so he'll definitely go nameless. He and his wife had looked at $1 million house or condo on Michigan Avenue. He had committed to the place in the 2008, you know, fall in the market happened, and he had all his money in his trading account, and guess what? He didn't have $1 million anymore, and he owed these guys like $200,000 in terms of a down payment, like in 2 days. So he brings me his position, and I think, I'm not positive, it was one of the electronic firms. If you put a gun to my head, I'd probably say Schwab, but I won't, you know, I'm not sure. Might have been Fidelity, could have been at the time. It wasn't Robinhood, they weren't around at the time. Frankie shows me his positions. He's short puts, which at the time he probably had cash secured, maybe not. And I'm looking at the thing, and he had $240,000 that morning, and the market's way down. And I said, you know, you've got so many positions here. You've got more live positions than I had when I was on the trading floor and had three solid clerks. So I'd have positions in 40 other stocks in the OEX. But even then, Frank, out of the 40, any given day, probably five or six were, you know what I'm talking about, live, where you're worried about your bid.
Right.
You're offered above the strike, your bid below. Something that takes somebody to manage like all day long, one position. This guy had like 20 of them. I said,
well, you have to define your span of control, and we're experts. And mine was about 8 stocks.
Yeah.
Any more than that, all of a sudden I'd look at something and I'd go, when did that go up 30%?
But I mean, you could put
down 30%.
You could put a September, June time spread on a calendar spread, and that's something you had to look at this week, unless, you know, there's nothing you can do about it anyway if the stock went up or down 50%, but you had a bunch of those in there. But then there are the ones, you know, on expiration day, literally, You're offered above the strike, you're bid below the strike, and then the minute that you get filled, you got to do the. And it's a big deal. So this guy's got like 20 of them. I said I would have to take two of my best people, and they have to but have put them on this for a week. I don't have the manpower. And oh, by the way, I think you're debit right now, which he wasn't really happy about. I said, I don't know what you're going to do, but how that firm allowed that guy to have all that stuff going at the same time. We would never.
They were getting paid on commissions.
Yeah, they're paid on commissions. But I'll bet. But there's nobody. I don't mean. But now Robinhood, they don't feel any responsibility to anybody. I don't imagine. You know.
No.
But I mean, obviously, if you're at a regular firm, I mean, you have to be very careful that not only because you know the people, so you're going to be careful anyway. But it's all a whole different. How those guys got in once you became electronic, you didn't have to care for any of your clients. I don't get it. But,
well, I will say something. We have a couple firms that were started by CBOE people that are still extant.
Yes.
I will say that Thinkorswim has always been very good for
they
me
got bought, until they got
customer
bought.
Customer service.
Well, they got bought.
Yeah, but they're still good. And yeah. Tasty Trade, same person, is also good, too.
They just got bought.
Right.
But yeah, it's a better system. Frank, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you on Monday.
Okay.
Actually, no, we'll talk to you on Monday. We're off Monday. S&P Futures up 12. Daz Futures up 69.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.